evening. I'm your host, Maria Vasquez-Boy, this evening for Art Speak Radio. You're tuned into 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio, KKFI. And I have the wonderful and talented Michelle Pons with me here in the studio as well. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Maria.
Great. Thank you for coming tonight. And we've got a very special evening of with wonderful guests. Can you talk about who's here tonight?
Yes, I'm happy to introduce our guests, Deborah Schaus, Ron Zoglin, and Cynthia Schroer. Deborah writes the Love Stories column for the Kansas City Star and co-facilitates the Kansas City Writers Group. Her writings have appeared in the Washington Post, Family Circle, Reader's Digest, Woman's Day Magazine, Newsweek, and other periodicals. Deborah is the author of Love in the Land of Dementia, Finding Hope in the Caregiver's Journey. Using her original self-published book as a catalyst, she and Ron Zoglin raised more than $80,000 for Alzheimer's programs and research. Last November, Central Recovery Press published an updated edition of the book. The book was a finalist in this year's Thorpe Men Literary Excellence Award. Ron is a professional storyteller who has performed for businesses, universities, and national and international conferences. Ron is also an antique dealer and appraiser and the owner of Brookside Antiques. He is the voice on the audio tapes, Even Mystics Have Bills to Pay, and The Adventures of the Little Green Dragon. Along with Deborah, he has traveled the world sharing stories with audiences in Turkey, Costa Rica, Chile, Ireland, England, Italy, Canada, New Zealand, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and the United States, and more. Cynthia is an experienced blues, jazz, Latin, and swing singer. She received classical vocal training at St. Mary College and has been active in solo performance, sacred music, ensemble work, weddings, funerals, community gatherings, and large choral groups in New Hampshire and Munster, Germany. In New Hampshire, she involved her voice as a healing medium, as director of Wellspring Singers, a hospice threshold choir, offering song to people in their final days. Currently, she is the vocalist for a Kansas City variety band. Why don't we start off by having all of you tell us how you became interested in Alzheimer's and dementia?
Well, I'm happy to start off. This is Deborah, and I became interested by, I guess, divine accident. My mother had dementia. And once I got past the confusion and grief and anger and started really understanding what was going on, I made this vow that I was going to look for the gifts and blessings in the journey, and that I was also going to stay connected with my mom throughout that journey. And so that led me to writing down the stories of our encounters together, and to eventually sharing those stories with people, and to eventually putting them into a book. And Ron and I have been sharing those stories for some years now, and it's just an amazing, connective, and healing experience for both of us.
And although I had no way of knowing it at the time, subsequently, both of my parents developed dementia, and I felt very fortunate to have Deborah's knowledge and wisdom lighting the pathway for what I was to be facing, and I can only tell you it helped tremendously.
And this is Cynthia, and I can only say I was initiated 24 years ago into the thought of how music can be healing when my daughter was unexpectedly hospitalized and had to have a pacemaker implantation. And it was a traumatic experience for her, and in recovery in ICU with bells and whistles going, she asked me to sing for her. And so for probably 8 hours that first week, I sang to her while she was recovering from her pain and needing some kind of solace. And so that led me into a Music for Healing and Transition program, which put me in touch with hospice, where I was doing some volunteer work as I worked on that practitionership.
Deborah, how do you come to that point where you are able to look for the gifts and the blessings?
For me, it did take a bit, and I really feel it's important for people to feel their feelings and talk about it with other people. I think it's really tempting to isolate yourself and feel strong, like I'm going to go through this by myself. Mm-hmm. But once I really started opening myself up to those feelings, I could let go of them. And I knew that my mom was there, and I wanted to connect with her and help her on the journey. And so little by little, through the wisdom of other caregivers, through going to the Alzheimer's Association here in town, I started understanding that the best thing I could do was to let go of my expectations and release my vision of my mother and embrace the mother I had. And when I was able to do that, it made life for both of us much better.
And it was interesting. I did read your book, and there's a story about your mother's birthday, and your father at one point says, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't do anything. And you answer him and say, no, because we need to celebrate.
Yes. There is something about taking care of yourself while you're honoring the other person. And we always celebrated my mother's birthday. And just because she was confused didn't mean she couldn't enjoy a birthday celebration. And in fact, she enjoyed it very much. My father at that time was having a really hard time because my mom was going through so much and she was different. She was really changing. But he was able to enjoy the celebration. And one of the things I just recently learned is that as our sense of taste naturally diminishes as we grow older, this taste of sweetness is the last to go. Well, my mom always had a sweet tooth. And to the very end of her life, she was happy with a little bite of chocolate or two.
Let's talk about your book a little bit and how that came about. You mentioned that you started writing down the experiences that you were having with your mother. Had you always journaled, or did this experience get you into doing that?
I was a writer at that time, but this experience drove me to journaling. And I did it because to make sense of what was going on. And so what I started doing is coming home after I'd see my mom, and I'd just write down what happened, just concretely. And after a while, when I started reading what I was writing, I thought, oh, this is interesting. And so I was familiar with writing personal essays, and so I started writing essays about this. And then one day when Ron and I were invited to read at a Potpourri magazine was then around, and I was invited to read a short story, and I told Ron, I said, I'm going to read one of these Alzheimer's essays. And this was a long time ago, and he said, I don't know who wants to hear that. And I said, well, I don't either, but I have a burning desire to read it. So I read a short story, and I read actually the title essay of this book, Love in the Land of Dementia. And when I was done, all these people came up to me, acquaintances and friends, and they said, my mother, my aunt, my grandmother. And that was a moment I think Ron and I both felt, first of all, the power of connecting with other caregivers and sharing your emotions and your truth about this, and then how widespread this was for people and how often we don't talk about it so much.
And you actually gave them permission to talk about it by talking about it first.
Yes, one of the things that I write about in the book is all my emotions, which aren't always pretty. You know, so I write about the grieving part, I write about the celebration part, and what we've seen as we've shared the different stories with people is it doesn't matter who you are or where you live, because we have had the opportunity to share in different cultures. This caregiving journey has a lot of similarities. And so one of my favorite comments is when Ron and I were in Istanbul and we just finished sharing stories. We've been translated. And afterwards, a man came up and he said to me, he said, your story is my story.
That's fabulous. I was curious about the story format. So you chose the story format because you'd had some experience writing essays before?
That's right. I was doing a lot of personal essay writing, and so it was a form I was really comfortable with, and I like it because you can have a story, you can have emotions, you can have universal truths, you can pack a lot into an essay. And then Ron was a storyteller. So Ron, say a bit about how we started working together telling the stories.
Right. We decided to take Deborah's stories and read them in tandem. So one of us would take a voice. Deborah usually would be the narrator, and I would take the various voices of the people that appeared in the stories. And it just made it much more dramatic and intriguing for people, and kind of like watching a ping pong match looking back and forth from one to the other. And it just made it a much more engaging manner of presentation.
Well, what struck me about the story format is that I do some volunteering with a bereavement support group. And oftentimes when you're going through something emotional like that, it affects your concentration, and you really can't read. You have trouble reading, especially longer pieces. And so I thought it was just perfect for the group that you were trying to reach, because they are short stories. And so it's something that someone who is going through that emotional trauma still can probably navigate and get something out of.
Thank you for noticing that. I think you're right. You can read a single story, or you can read the whole book, and it works out well.
Well, Deborah, Ron, and Cynthia are going to do a couple performances for us tonight, and the first one will be done in the next segment, but first we're going to take a short break.
90.1 FM is supported by Noir City. Kansas City's Festival of Film Noir is coming November 14th through the 16th at Alamo Drafthouse. 10 noir films over 3 days are presented by the Film Noir Foundation's Czar of Noir, Eddie Muller. Opening night's features include Peggy Cummins, the star of 1950's Gun Crazy. Friday's Noir City Nightclub features music by the Late Night Callers, lounge vocalist Laura Ellis, and the burlesque of Evie Lavelle. Kansas City becomes Noir City. Tickets at noircitykc.com.
On August 16, thousands of Palestinian solidarity activists convened at the Port of Oakland and blocked workers from the Longshore Union, ILWU, from unloading an Israeli cargo ship. The movement to block the boat for Gaza is growing. Find out about it this week on the Heartland Labor Forum. Also, last month, two speakers from Columbia were in Kansas City to explain where our cut flowers come from and the sweatshops that produce them. Thursday at 6 p.m., rebroadcast Friday, 5 a.m.
Welcome back to Art Speak Radio. I'm Michelle Pond with Maria Vasquez Boyd and our guests Deborah Schaus, Ron Zoglin, and Cynthia Shore. And they're going to do a performance for us right now of one of Deborah's stories.
We're going to share a story from my mom when she was pretty deep into Alzheimer's. And this is a story that really helped me see deeper into the beauty of who people really are. The story is called
The Very Thought of You.
One night, Dad walks into the nursing home's dining room and hears the nurse aides singing.
The very thought of you.
Dad stands still, transfixed and amazed. This song is significantly different than the rock and roll, metal, or hip-hop usually playing in this dining room.
Where did you learn that song?
Dad asks, applauding loudly when the song has ended. He knows from his days as a DJ that Ray Noble composed that song in 1934. He is pretty sure none of the staff was born before the 1960s.
Gene, one of the residents, taught it to us,
says Linnell, giving my mother her last spoonful of butterscotch pudding.
We love it. I love it, too,
Dad says. That song brings Dad back to his radio days,
when he worked the graveyard shift playing such songs.
He and Mom went dancing to big band music.
And often visited clubs to listen to torch singers breathlessly, tenderly, sadly, lay out such lyrics.
This is a song he especially loves. Often, Dad tells me,
he just doesn't remember things the way he used to.
At age 85, he sometimes misplaces words, tucks away the endings to stories in hidden pockets, and forgets what he was going to say.
He does just happen to remember that Bing Crosby had a big hit with The Very Thought of You in 1944, and he knows that in 1950, Doris Day sang it in the movie Man with a Horn, also featuring Jack Benny, and Ricky Nelson sang the song in the 1960s.
Nat King Cole,
Andy Williams,
Rod Stewart,
Billie Holiday,
Frank Sinatra,
and Duke Ellington
also sang, played, or recorded this song.
This song should make a comeback.
Dad says to my mother later that evening as she pushes her wheelchair around the nursing home corridors,
it's a timeless song that deserves more attention, don't you think?
He asks Mom the question even though he knows she is staring at her lap and probably incapable of really listening.
Don't you think this song has the potential to make it big once again?
She makes a sound that he takes to mean agreement.
What do you think?
He asks me the next day when the three of us are eating lunch in the home's private dining room. I love the idea.
In that case, I have a surprise for you,
Dad says.
I have arranged for a special after-lunch concert with Jean.
When our dessert is almost done, Dad goes into the main dining room and comes back minutes later with a solemn-faced Jean. Thank you for agreeing to sing for us, I say.
My voice isn't what it used to be,
she answers. She lowers her head, pauses, and begins to sing.
The very thought of you, and I forget to do the little ordinary things that everyone ought to do. I'm living in a kind of daydream. I'm happy as a queen, and foolish though it may seem, to me that's everything, the mere idea of you, the longing here for you. You'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you. I see your face in every flower, your eyes and stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
I have often seen Jean in her wheelchair, parked by the front door of the nursing home, as though she were expecting a taxi or visitor. Like today, she usually wears an unremarkable white sweater and gray sweatpants. Many times I have said a quick hello to her as I walk by, and she has nodded politely. But now I look at Jean more closely. She looks at me as she sings.
You'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near to you.
I see Jean's elegant cheekbones hidden under her loose skin. I can imagine just how glamorous she would have looked.
In a clingy black dress, holding the microphone, the spotlight on her, her face soulful and absorbed, the big band backing her up, coaxing the audience deeper into the song.
Jean doesn't remember much of her big band days. My father has heard the stories from her niece, who visits once a month.
What Jean does remember is all the words and the intricate melody of this song.
One of the many she sang so beautifully during the 30s and 40s. Jean finishes, and Dad and I applaud. Mom smiles at the sound of the clapping. "Tell me some of the bands you sang with," I say, eager to know more about this talented woman who must have known how to completely melt a room.
But Jean wheels away.
The concert is over, and the star doesn't have time to mingle with the audience.
"She's good. You can tell how good she was,"
Dad says.
"I was thinking that maybe some of the musicians in town might want to sing that song."
I nod, still thinking about Jean, a woman who has forgotten so much,
yet who still remembers this song.
We finish our lunch. I maneuver Mom's wheelchair out into the corridor. We stroll through the large dining room, greeting staff and residents. Yet even while I am talking, the lyrics glide through me.
"It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love."
I know what a superb rendition I'd hear in one of our city's great jazz clubs. I also know that this beacon of beauty and hope,
this decades-old, aching, heartfelt love song,
sounds equally beautiful
sung in a nursing home in the middle of the afternoon.
Oh, thank you so much for performing that for us. That was just beautiful.
It's a pleasure to share it. And that story and that song just reminds me a lot of the power of music, and that's one reason we love to share that, is because even when we've forgotten a lot, and I think we all experience this sometimes, when you hear a familiar song, oftentimes the lyrics, the tune come rushing back into you in a really thrilling way. And there is a wonderful music program that has just started here in Kansas City, inspired by a movie called Alive Inside. And this program is done by the Alzheimer's Association and is dedicated to helping people who are living with dementia have the music that they most love. And they call it putting together a personal playlist.
Wow.
And a song on your playlist is a song that evokes a memory. It's not just a song you love. Like, this would be a song on my playlist because I have a lot of memories about this song.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a wonderful program where people can contribute an iTunes card, a used iPod, headsets. And when you get to hear the songs on your playlist, just like all of us do, you come alive. It's really exciting.
Deborah, you say that there is a program is it here in Kansas City?
It started in Brooklyn, New York several years ago, and it's called Music and Memory.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such an exciting program because a social worker named Dan Cohen was driving along listening to the radio, and he thought, how am I going to hear my favorite songs if I'm ever into a nursing home? Because mm-hmm. he thought there's a digital divide when you go into a nursing
yeah.
home. You don't
yeah.
have your techie stuff.
Yeah.
And so he started asking around people in nursing homes, do you guys use iPods? Do people have their own music? And they said no. He started going in, interviewing patients and their people with Alzheimer's and their families,
mm-hmm.
and then making them personal playlists, putting them on an iPod, getting headphones to block out the distractions. And so what would happen is somebody who would maybe be your stereotypical person sitting in a wheelchair in a nursing mm-hmm. home, slumped over, not talking, you put on the headphones, you put on a song that they love, and they come to life,
yeah.
and they're singing, and they're moving. And so this film came to Kansas City, and our Alzheimer's Association got very excited about this program and has started it, and is free of charge through our Alzheimer's Association.
Well, and that's a very powerful trigger, like you said, music. And if you all may have seen the YouTube video of a patient that was in a care facility, and he hears the music, and what a difference that made in that individual's life. I'm going to stop you right here. We're just going to take a real quick musical break, kind of rearrange some things, grab some water. And what do we have coming up next?
Well, we have another performance coming up.
Terrific. Stay tuned.
Lighthouse, Like Me Lighthouse, Folly Theater, November 13. Headliner, Wanda Sykes. Emmy winner, Judy Gold. All-American Boy, Steve Grand. America's Got Talent, Wendy Liebman. Drag legend, Melinda Ryder. An evening of comedy and song to benefit the Like Me Lighthouse. Sponsored by KKFI, November 13th. More information at follytheater.org.
90.1 FM presents Truck Stop Honeymoon, Cowgirls Train Set, and Carswell and Hope at the Lawrence Arts Center. It's November 22nd, 2014, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Tickets online at kkfi.org/events. That's November 22nd, Truck Stop Honeymoon, Cowgirls Train Set, and Carswell and Hope at the Lawrence Arts Center. Tickets at kkfi.org/events.
Welcome back to Art Speak Radio. I'm Michelle Pond with Maria Vasquez Boyd.
Hello, Michelle. Guest,
hello, Maria. And our guests, Deborah Schaus, Ron Zoglin, and Cynthia Shore. And we are going to have another performance of one of Deborah's stories.
Ron had mentioned that both of his parents also had dementia. And this is a story from some of his mom's last days, and the story is called Singing out memories. Molly is not in the mood for music. Her mouth is in scowl position as she slumps onto our sofa and says,
I wish I could die.
Molly has been wishing this for some months.
But despite her 97 years of life and difficulty in seeing and hearing, despite the maddening encroachment of forgetfulness and confusion, despite increased frailty and physical decline,
Molly lives on. I sit beside Molly, holding her year-old great-granddaughter, Annabelle. At the sight of Annabelle's rosy cheeks and winning smile, Molly smiles.
What a pretty baby,
she says, holding out her finger for Annabelle to grab.
How old is she now? 1 year?
I tell her. Ron, Molly's son, brings Molly tissue and a glass of water. Then there's a knock on the door, and Emily, the music therapist, comes in. She sets down her guitar case and reintroduces herself to Molly.
We met a couple of weeks ago,
she says.
I sang you songs and we talked about your travels.
Molly shrugs and says,
whatever. Shall I sing more songs today?
Emily asks.
If you want to,
Molly says, closing her eyes. For the last 2 months, we've been lucky to add a hospice team to the assisted living staff who care for Molly. Emily is part of the arts program hospice offers, and Ron and I wanted to experience this session with Molly, thinking it would be something meaningful to share. Emily has brought an array of bells and rattles. As Emily sings,
down by the old mill stream, where I first met you,
Annabelle eagerly takes two strings of bells and shakes them. Molly's eyes are still closed, but Annabelle looks right at Emily.
Molly, would you like to hear Just the Way You Look Tonight or Fly Me to the Moon?
Emily asks. Molly doesn't respond, and I figure she's fallen asleep. I'm about to request Just the Way You Look, but Molly pipes up, her eyes still shut.
Fly Me to the Moon,
she says.
Fly me to the moon and let me play among the stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me.
Emily's voice is sweet and melodic. Ron and I can't resist singing along.
Humming around the lyrics we've forgotten and skirting the high notes.
Annabelle moves on to Mini Rain Sticks, adding in a soothing percussion.
You've flown a lot of places, haven't you, Molly?
Emily asks when the song is over.
I have.
Molly opens her eyes.
I've been around. You've been to France and England, is that right? And India and Russia,
Molly says.
Mom's also traveled to China years ago when few Americans were going there,
Ron tells us.
You've led an adventurous life,
Emily says.
I really have. What shall I play next, Molly? Would you like to hear I Left My Heart in San Francisco or Oh, What a Beautiful Morning? San Francisco.
Molly sits up. She and Annabelle both look at Emily as she sings the nostalgic tune.
I left my heart in San Francisco, high on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care.
That's a city I'd like to visit someday,
Emily says, resting her guitar across her lap.
Have you been there? Many times,
Molly says. Song by song, story by story, the hour unfolds. Emily quietly offers a choice of old standards, and the soothing, familiar music leads into a pleasant, reminiscing conversation. At the end of the session, Annabelle is mellowed into sprawling slumber, and Molly is sitting straight and alert. For Annabelle, the music was a lullaby, and for Molly, it was an affirming wake-up call.
Fill my heart with song and let me sing forevermore. You are all I long for, all I worship and adore. In other words, please be true. In other words, I love you.
Thank you all for those two beautiful performances tonight. Cynthia, I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes about your experience with music and hospice work. But first, why don't you tell us a little bit how you connected with Deborah and Ron to do these, to be part of these stories?
I'd be happy to tell that story. I met Ron and Deborah at a local grocery store, and we got to talking about vegan dishes. And you don't always run into people to talk about vegan cuisine. So we hit it off and would run into each other here and there in town at mutual events. And then it was one night over dinner at a local restaurant. I was sharing my interest in music and healing and how I had directed actually the first threshold choir for a hospice in southern New Hampshire.
And can you tell our listeners what a threshold choir is?
Sure. A threshold choir is an intentional choir. It could be, and usually is, few voices, maybe four, five, six voices. And the intention with the music is to bring some kind of respite to people who are dying or in a process of dying. They may not be in the active state of dying, but let's say they're at a hospice house or they're in their house and they're not able to get up very often.
Mm-hmm.
And so they think about death. And so it could be a situation where the choir goes in and sings songs that are familiar songs, much like the story songs that you've heard tonight,
uh-huh.
That we do for people.
That's wonderful. And so you can, you might be with the same person for a number of days?
It's possible. Yeah, it's possible.
And does a family request this? Or
it's always through a family request.
Uh-huh.
For instance, at the hospice house in southern New Hampshire in a town called Merrimack, we would go in and sing in a common space. So there was the intention of just bringing a soothing sound. And if families were present, as often was the case, and they requested us to come into the room, then we'd be happy to go in and do so. And sometimes the patient, if the patient was alert enough and wished for that, they could request, and we also responded to those requests.
That's wonderful. So can you give an example of how music's been supportive of end-of-life transition?
I think of a gentleman who was in the hospice house. He has now since passed. But our group was there, and we were singing some songs. And he heard us singing and asked one of the nurses to bring us in. So we went in and asked what some of his favorite songs were and
uh-huh.
what was an example of a song he would like. And he asked us to sing How Great Thou Art.
Uh-huh.
So we sang that very traditional song, very moving. And the women who were there, we actually encircled him. So he was in the center of us, and we sang that song.
Mm-hmm.
And he teared up. And from that experience, he began speaking about a friend of his who had passed the year before. And it was a friend that he was close to, and he was reminiscing about the funeral ceremony
uh-huh.
at which there was the song When the Saints Go Marching In. And he was
kind of polar opposite there.
Right. But it was a joyous song, and he was clearly thinking of his friend who had crossed over already, and then to be in the realms of the saints who, in his belief, were waiting for him. So I just picked up on that deep questioning and feeling that I could sense in him, and asked if he would like us to sing when the saints go marching uh-huh. in. So he was delighted, and we held hands with him this time. So he was up, we were energetically together in this circle of life uh-huh. singing. So we sang when the saints go marching in, and it brought great joy to him. And I can't know for sure, but the week following, he did pass. And I have a sense that it really helped him to get ready and to meet his friend and to meet the other saints in his life.
Yeah, that's wonderful work. You talked a little bit about how you started with this and from a personal experience.
Yes.
Then what did you do? Did you get right into hospice work, or did you do some other therapies? I remember reading about or watching a piece on Congresswoman Giffords, and when she was first recovering from her gunshot wound, they had her singing songs before she could to help her in her speech therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know that music, is often used for those kinds of therapy too.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was after this experience with my daughter where she continued to ask me to sing. And first time it was a pacemaker implantation, but she asked me to lay my hand on her throat where she had experienced intubation, so there was some trauma to that site. So first she asked me to lay my hand there, and then later asked me to move to the site where the pacemaker had been implanted in her abdomen. She was 4 years old at the time. And that led me into just wanting to know how sound, vibration, and healing works. So I did find a program called Music for Healing and Transition, and so thus began a study of scientifically looking at the role of vibration and notions such as entrainment and intention when one is singing. So it was through that program that I went to the local hospice and asked to volunteer so I could get my hours and had experience then working and sitting with people and doing music with people. So that's how that started. So there was study and then there was action.
Well, thank you for sharing those experiences with us. And Deborah, your music meant a lot to your father well before your mother's illness, didn't it?
It sure did. It was an integral part of his life. As I read in the story, he was a DJ. We always had music in our house. Nobody liked the classical music, but my dad's. They always sent those LPs in those days home with him. They sent the musicals home with him. So we had great music when we were growing up.
We're going to take a short break, but don't go far because we'll be right back.
.1 FM presents Tonight's the Night, a tribute to the music of Neil Young. Wednesday, November 26th at 8 p.m., the night before Thanksgiving, Davies Uptown Ramblers Club. A full night dedicated to the music of the one and only Neil Young, featuring Alexis Barclay, The Hardship Letters, Cody Wyoming, Two-Headed Cow, Jason Vivoni, Chad Brothers, Mikal Shapiro, Barry Lee, Clark Wyatt, Lewis Myers, David Paul, Sarah Carpenter, Matt Darvin Davis, Paul Andrews, and many more. That's Wednesday, November 26th, the night before Thanksgiving at Davies Uptown. For more information, kkfi.org/events.
This week on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
The healthcare crisis is a euphemism for the catastrophe of the American diet. We're spending over $2 trillion a year to treat preventable chronic diseases. That has to change.
I'm Neil Harvey. Please join us for Going Locavore, Urban Innovation, Community Transformation with Michael Pollan and others on The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature.
Friday morning at 9:30, right before Eclectics.
You're listening to Art Speak Radio. I'm Michelle Pond with Maria Vasquez Boyd.
I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd. Yay!
Yay!
You know, this has just been a wonderful evening. I know there's a fair amount of sadness and sorrow attached to the subject matter, Alzheimer's, and the loss of that individual's memory and all, but your stories, Deborah and Ron, your storytelling and the music come together that just make it so such a beautiful transition into a different place in an individual's lives, and it affects us all. So thank you so much for sharing your beautiful words and music.
Thank you, and thank you for mentioning that, because I do think it's a really spiritual journey when you go beyond the memory, and that's one of the things we're working on next, is the creativity inherent in this journey.
And Deborah, you're actually researching a new book along those lines, aren't you?
I am. The tentative title is Creativity in the Land of Dementia, Finding Inspiration in the Care Partner's Journey. And the book is a combination of expressive therapies for people living with dementia, and then creative renewals for care partners. But there are so many exciting, connective things you can do even if you don't have all your memory about you. And we've been talking about some of them right here, with the musical aspect, very important. When we were just traveling to Santa Fe and got to be part of a sing-along, and that was so much fun. And just using something familiar like music or art to trigger memory or reminiscent. We visited the Philbrook Museum in Tulsa. They're one of many museums, and Nelson here has just started a program where there's a dementia arts tour, and you look at a painting together, and you talk about what you observe the painting, and you let it trigger stories, and then you go and you draw something. Cooking together is something very creative, and most of us love to be in the kitchen near food, even if we don't want to be responsible for preparing food, and that's another thing. So there's a host of exciting, creative things that are going on around the country, around the world, and that's what I'm going to be looking into, and I love it.
And Deborah, why don't you give us your website or your blog? I know that you're doing some posts on your blog now that relate to this topic.
I am. My blog is very simple. It's Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Schaus, S-H-O-U-S-E, writes, W-R-I-T-E-S, Deborah Schaus, writes, .wordpress.com. And every Tuesday I write something. I'm really dedicating the blog now to the exploration of creativity in all its guises. So it's a lot of fun. I'd love to share it with you all.
Thank you. What are some tips you have for someone who is visiting someone with Alzheimer's?
Thank you for asking that. One thing about visiting someone with Alzheimer's is that sometimes you don't know exactly what's going to be happening. And so to go with an open mind and open heart, sometimes it's nice to bring something along to share, to read, to eat, so you have an offering. I know one of the things that really helped me when I was visiting my mom was having either Ron or a friend come with me, because sometimes when you're used to somebody a lot, you don't see them in all their greatness and glory. You're used to them. And having someone who hasn't seen them so often come along and appreciate maybe the stories you've heard many, many times, notice something you haven't seen, is very helpful. I think the main thing is just to relax and have fun and go to where they are. Really enjoy where they are right now. One of the many pieces of advice I got from the Alzheimer's Association is to not try to bring somebody to where you are, but to travel to where they are.
And my mother did have Alzheimer's. So I had some of the experiences that you had, and also went to a class or a seminar there. And one of the things that I took away from there was that sometimes you have to do some things for yourself. And that was what the story about your mother's birthday party reminded me of, that, because you wanted to celebrate, you know, and know that she wouldn't celebrate in the same way that you did, but that was something necessary for you. Can you expound on that a little bit?
I can. I think what you just said is a great comment. We were just on a trip, and we were visiting with people from several different Alzheimer's associations. And one of the questions I asked was, if you had to give a care partner one tip, what would it be? Each person said in a slightly different way, take care of yourself. Make sure you have respite. Make sure you have time for yourself so you have renewal, so you can really appreciate this complicated and interesting journey you're on. So thank you for mentioning that, Michelle.
And another thing was to really not try to egg the person on to remember something, because it's in all likelihood not going to happen.
Well, I think that's true. And I think when a really hard thing for me was when my mom didn't know who I was. Mm. And that was very complicated for me. And I wanted, you know, I thought, my mother has two children. Why can't she remember me? My brother was out of town, so I was going, me. But I got, you know, over that. And I think that's one of the things that talking to other experienced caregivers, going to caregiver support groups, which the Alzheimer's Association has, and they're free. The more you talk to other people and understand the journey and how to get support and how to support each other, I think the better off everybody is, because we all need to hear about this. It affects all of us in one way or the other.
I remember a woman coming up to my mother and saying, do you remember me? And she was, well, of course I do. And the woman said, who am I? And my mother said, well, you're that lady. So, you know, sometimes...
That's a really good answer.
What can I say? What about some tips for around the holidays?
That's another great question. I think, again, the important thing is not to cling on to the behavior you're used to around the holidays. My mom was often a person who baked up for the holidays. And the first holiday that I knew my mom could not bake her brownies, her butterscotch brownies, her date crumbs, I was really, really sad. And then I, you know, thought, okay, what am I going to do about this? So unfortunately, I have a brother who's a really great guy and a great baker. I asked my brother to make my mom's recipes. And then I also realized my mom couldn't cook too much, but I figured out how my mom could sit with me at the table and we could snap green beans together and we could peel a banana for a fruit salad. So we could still be together sharing the same energy, even though my mom wasn't physically doing the same things. It worked out very well. So part of it is being flexible and, of course, always having a really good sense of humor, because stuff is going to happen.
Can you tell us a little bit about the HERO Project?
Sure. The HERO Project is a story scrapbooking project that Ron and I put together. It started out as a way to get my nephew, who was at the time 10 years old, and he was coming to stay with me when my mom and dad were there. And he was kind of scared of my mom. He wasn't used to her new behavior. So we decided to do a story that starred my nephew, Jake. And the story was called The Strongest Kid in the World, because he was a real boy, loved to lift things. And so we got my mom and dad and Jake involved, and we did a photo shoot about this kid who was so strong he could move everything, but he couldn't move my mom, Nana. And he tried pushing, he tried pulling, and then he had to ask advice from a wise old guy that was my dad. And my dad said, Nana, darling, come here, please. And she came. And the strongest kid in the world learned that there's something stronger than power, and it's love. Mm. So it's a really, it's a beautiful, silly, simple story. But it was a story that brought our family together. Jake wrote out the words in his own hand. We took the pictures, and we scrapbooked it together. And then we had something to share with friends and family, because people sometimes are scared when somebody has Alzheimer's. And so, and they don't sometimes understand that it's fine to be around them, and you know, you don't have to know what need to know what to say. So we made a lot of those projects. And, in fact, that's one great thing we did on the holidays. For a different thing to focus on, instead of thinking about what we lost, we thought about, here's something new and fun we did. So we did a hero project on The Little Kitchen That Could, and it was about my kitchen, which never does anything, being forced to cook. It's a very good story.
And I know that you've also used these stories, or they can be used, to introduce a person into a new setting, like if they move into a new assisted living facility.
These are really wonderful ways to let people know about the life story of the person who is there in a quick and simple way. We did a really nice one for Ron's dad called Lucky Frank, and he was a part of it. And Ron's dad always had good luck. And so that story, the moral was, there are things that Frank had lost in his life, but he still retained that luck. He was still lucky to have his family, lucky to have Molly who loved him. And he still, even when he couldn't remember, always went at cards. Always. So, and that's what we used that when he was in assisted living. He moved to a memory care unit. We used that. We also used it on our visits where Ron would sit with his dad and read him the story of his life. And his dad loved it. And so it was something we never got, any of us ever got tired of.
Do you have any last words or any events or projects that you, other projects that you want to talk about?
Well, I'd love anybody who's interested about this music and memory program, please contact our local Alzheimer's Association. It's 913-831-3888, I think. I may have made a mistake. But it's a really easy way to contribute and get involved to something that's going to change the lives of many people here in our own city. And it's a fun project.
And if you're interested in the Hero Project, you're welcome to go to our archives at www.thecreativityconnection.com. That's thecreativityconnection.com. And we've got posted 4 or 5 examples of the Hero Project, so you can make them on your own.
That's great. And Deborah, why don't you give us your blog address again?
It's Deborah Schaus Writes, deborahschaus.wordpress.com.
And Cynthia, do you have any gigs coming up that you want to mention?
Well, end of November, I'm actually singing with the band Kansas City Variety Band, and we perform for elderly, believe it or not. There's a 91-year-old woman who is organizing this particular gig, and about 10 elderly couples come out and they ballroom dance. And that's another thing
fabulous.
I think about it as a creative outlet for Alzheimer's, is dancing.
Great idea.
Yes. Do you have a website or any contact information you'd
sure.
like to give?
Sure. I'd love to give that. kcvarietyband.com, and it's a 5-piece band behind me.
We're going to a break, and we'll be right back. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Ron. Thank you, Cynthia, so much. We'll be back with Danny Orendorf.
It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hello, everyone. This is Enrique Chi
and Juan Carlos Chauran
of Making Movies. And you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI,
Kansas City Community Radio.
listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd, your friend, your pal at ArtSpeak Radio. And right before Deborah, Ron, and Cynthia take off, I wanted to ask them just quickly with the book that you've written, if that is accompanied by a CD of the spoken word and the performance.
Well, it is not yet accompanied by that, but I love the idea because the combination of those two art forms has been really powerful when we've performed them. The music drives home the story and vice versa. So I love your idea, and maybe it will happen soon.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. So, Michelle, this is your huge debut of interviewing people, and you're doing a fine job, a spectacular job.
Well, thank you very much. I had a lot of help. What wonderful performers and what an interesting topic to talk about.
I'm just glad I remembered your name. Sometimes I don't always call you by the right name. Hey, you. Hey, kid.
Thank
you so much. Who is our next guest in the studio?
Our next guest is Danny Orendorf, and he is a curator, writer, researcher, and activist currently working as the 2013-14 Curator-in-Residence and Interim Program Director for the Charlotte Street Foundation. Welcome, Danny, and thank you for coming tonight.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Why don't we start out with an overview of the foundation and its mission?
Okay, well, it's kind of a really broad topic just because Charlotte Street is such an expansive organization. But, you know, Charlotte Street began in 1997 as an organization that wanted to produce opportunities and recognition for local artists as there was sort of a void in that regard in terms of directly funding artists, awarding them, recognizing them critically, and so forth. So that was kind of the thrust of the organization to get started. And since then, our Visual Artist Award program still remains. We also added a Generative Performing Awards program, a Rocket Grants program, which is funding community-based and sort of alternative and experimental arts practices. We've had a studio residency program for the past 10 years where we've provided literally hundreds of artists in the Kansas City region with free studio and rehearsal space. We also have three exhibition venues, La Esquina Gallery, which is down at 1000 West 25th Street, and then two smaller galleries called Paragraph and Project Space, which are downtown at 12th and Walnut, thereabouts. So that kind of is a brief snapshot. We also do billboards. We, sponsor trips to a upstate New York residency called Art Oh My. We are also part of the Artist Inc. program. So it kind of never ends, but all we do. But yeah, it's been a really tremendous opportunity to work with the organization.
And you're from Chicago?
I am. Yeah, I'm born and raised Southside Chicago, and then kind of traveled a lot through my 20s. Lived in Arizona, in Los Angeles, San Francisco. Returned to Chicago for graduate school, and then came here shortly thereafter.
And how did you find out about the opportunities with Charlotte Street?
Well, so Charlotte Street, just in the past 2 years, began what is known as the Curatorial Residency Program, or the Curator-in-Residence Program. And that opportunity crossed my path by the way of an amazing curator and arts administrator named Shannon Stratton in Chicago, who runs Three Walls Gallery, is one of the co-founders and the current director of Three Walls Gallery in Chicago, a great nonprofit and experimental arts center. And I had done some writing and some work with Shannon. I was also a student of hers. And she had worked with Kate Hackman, who was previously the artistic director of Charlotte Street, organizing an exchange program between the Three Walls Gallery and the studio or the Charlotte Street Foundation and artists that had been awarded or granted residency. So that's kind of how the opportunity crossed my path, and then it just was such a great fit, I think, for the kind of curatorial projects I do and the way of operating in the arts that I enjoy. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Let's go back and talk a little bit about the Visual and Performing Arts Awards in a little bit more detail. I know the deadline for that's coming up.
Yes, so the deadline is midnight, November 17th. And this is a program that at this stage awards five unrestricted cash prizes of $10,000 each. To three visual artists and two what we call generative performing artists in the Kansas City region. So it's the eligibility is based on five counties, and if I was a Missouri resident, I would probably be able to recite them for you, but that's an area of that's a blind spot for me. But you can find out the eligibility requirements on our website, which is charlottestreet.org. But like I said, the Visual Artist Awards began in 1997, and as a way to really honor the exceptional art production that was happening here in the city and continues to happen here in the city, and that is a program that we have partnered with the Nerman Museum in Johnson County, the H&R Block Art Space, and Grand Arts to host exhibitions resulting from the selections made during that jurying process. So essentially it's a open application. Anyone can apply, and it is reviewed at this point by a panel of curators, critics, and other artists that are assembled to include both local professionals and visiting curators or critics or artists to kind of host that review. And then the same goes for the Generative Performing Awards. And what we mean by that is that the generative performing aspect is that it is intended for artists who are producing new and original work here in Kansas City. So composers, playwrights that are doing original work, for instance, much more so than people that are performing the pieces of other creators.
So, Danny, tell us... Strong arm. Tell us, drop some names. Tell us who are some of the judges so that we can strong arm them into, picking the people that we want. I know, I'm just playing with you. I have in front of me that the Generative Performing Artists Awards will receive, the recipients will recognize two exceptional artists based in the five county greater Kansas City metro area who are creating innovative new work in the fields of dance, theater, music, opera, sound, art performance, performance art, multimedia performance, spoken word puppetry, or hybrid performance-based forms.
Yes.
So it's pretty out there. I mean, it's pretty open.
Yes.
These awards aim to support generative artists, creators of original work. So that application is coming up. The deadline for that, you said, is November 17th at midnight. What happens if you get their application at 11:59?
Oh, it's still eligible. Absolutely. it's all an automated online application. And, honestly, for any artists out there who are reticent to apply because they're nervous about the portal through which you apply, us at Charlotte Street are very... willing to kind of talk through the application process, provide some pointers and some tips to anybody that needs them. So you can email us at our main email address, which is info@charlottestreet.org, if you have any questions of that variety. But yes, all applications are accepted up until that point.
11:59.
And then...
or one, right?
And then if you have any, if there's hiccups with the website, we absolutely understand.
Well, and I don't mean to... throw this in, but I'm going to, because the applications for the visual arts just closed back in September this year.
We're running them concurrently, actually, this year. So you might be thinking about the residency program. We always are running so many different open applications.
Because I'm looking at the applications open Thursday, September 11th, 2014, for visual and performing.
Yeah, so they open in September at the same time, and then they both close November 17th.
I get it.
Yeah, it's okay.
When will those winners be announced?
That timeline is still kind of in development because we're issuing our invitations at the moment to the committees that we'll be reviewing. But typically, the review of finalists occurs sometime in February or March, and then it's really uncommon for award winners to be notified any later than late March, early April. So, yeah.
And Danny, Maria and I have been touched by Charlotte Street Foundation. Is actually part of a group of artists called Vox Narrow that received a Rocket Grant a couple of years ago, and we did cultural events in the community, particularly focusing on newer immigrant groups to try to help introduce the cultures to the people.
Fantastic, yeah.
And Maria is an Artist Inc.
Alumni, but I was the second class, that was 5 years ago. But who can you just talk about who some of the previous winners or recipients were of the Charlotte Street Foundation Visual Arts and Performing?
Sure. So this past year on the visual awards side of things, and I should mention that the exhibition of their artwork is still on view down at the Nerman through mid-December. It's really fantastic exhibition featuring our winners, which were Gary Noland and Sean Starwitz and Amy Kligman. So one artist, Gary, working in kind of found objects and materials, working sculpturally mostly, and Amy, who is a really fantastic painter, also experimenting with some new media sculptures that are not on view, but her paintings are absolutely exceptional. So now, very interesting.
Now, yeah. Gary has the big sort of marina floating sort of foam.
Yeah.
And, I touched those when no one was looking.
Oh, I'm sure Gary doesn't. I did a panel not too long ago with Gary where he actually wanted to carve up some of them just to really show the kind of properties and the creative potential of that material. It's been, highly artificial substance that I think has just fascinated him for its visual components and its sort of reminiscent visual qualities with kind of earthen forms, stalagmites. It's a really, he does such incredible work with the...
I think you have to look at that, his work twice and go, I know what that is.
And then I should say too, Sean Starwitz, who is also in the show, has drawings as well as some materials relative to research that is ongoing, having to do with the vacancy issue in Kansas City. And it's a really kind of exceptional opportunity to see Sean's work in a gallery format, whereas most of his practice is conducted in public. So that is the visual artist side of things. And then in the performance side of things, we had Jane Gotch, who is a really fantastic choreographer.
Met her through Artist Inc., she's and you know what? She has the best laugh. I mean, she's extremely talented and beautiful and very innovative, but she has the best laugh.
Yeah, very charismatic, very kind, and always, a kind of constant presence at a lot of events throughout the city. So she was somebody who was really deserving of this award for both her work, but also her kind of service to the arts here in Kansas City. And then the other awardee was Herman Mahari, who is a jazz musician, composer, and also kind of branching out to some pretty experimental performance formats, working, I believe, on an opera at the moment. So he's doing all sorts of fantastic work and has a lot of really incredible energy around him.
Yeah, he's got a presence in Kansas City. I believe he plays quite frequently with Mark Lowry.
Yeah.
With that, we're just going to take a real quick break for underwriting, and we'll be right back.
Sure.
I'm Philip.
I'm Elizabeth.
And together, we're a third of the 10th voice.
More than that, you're the first week.
And together, we're the second week.
And I'm the third week.
And then we also have Trans Talk, because it's the 10th voice.
And we refuse to be silent.
Saturdays, 1 p.m., KKFI. Be there. I'm too close to the mic.
This week on American Roots.
Sam Stone came home to his wife and family. After serving in the conflict overseas.
It's an extended visit with John Prine about his life and songs of protest, humor, and everyday pathos. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Wednesday evening at 7.
You're listening to Art Speak Radio. I'm Michelle Pond with Maria Vasquez Boyd. Hi, Maria.
Hello.
And our guest this segment is Danny Orndorff. And Danny, what other upcoming events does Charlotte Street have?
Sure. Most recently, I actually opened up the exhibition, my most recently curated exhibition for La Esquina this past Friday. It's a group show called Loving After Lifetimes of All of This. So that's currently on view. And then we have an opening coming up on the 21st, Friday the 21st, at our Paragraph Gallery downtown, curated by a former studio resident named Laura Isaac, called In Real Life. So it's another group exhibition kind of exploring, I think she's calling it post-internet art. So it'll be very interesting to see what the contents of that show is. I'm not too familiar with it yet. And then one of another upcoming event that we're really excited about is our winter open house for the studio residency program. And this is really the kind of first opportunity for the public to encounter the artists that are currently enrolled in our studio residency program. Mm-hmm. So that happens on December 12th, and it's kind of a happy hour after work event, 5 to 7, for people to just kind of walk through the studios of the really incredible artists that are currently in the program. So, and those studios are right downtown as well, at 12th and Walnut, and then also at Town Pavilion. So, yeah.
That's great. Well, and as usual, Maria and Danny, there's a lot going on in our city.
I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting here just minding the board.
Just man on the board. And you're such a smooth operator.
Oh, that recalls a song.
Well, you know, Danny, you will be back with us on Art Speak next month because not only are you connected with Charlotte Street Foundation, but you also have an exhibit of your very own.
Yes.
And what is the name of that and where
so
is it at?
So that's the show that opened here at La Esquina last week called Loving After Lifetimes of All This. And it's a project that was funded by an organization in Asheville, North Carolina, called the Center for Craft, Creativity, and Design. So this exhibition will travel there to their galleries in January, late January of 2015. So that's the project that I'm kind of most focused on right now, producing a full-length catalog for the show and commissioning essays and that kind of thing. Yeah, and then have other projects on the horizon outside of Kansas City.
Outside of where? Like where?
I'm working on a project for The Kitchen in New York, which is a performance experimental arts venue. And I'm working on a sort of multimedia adaptation of a Richard Brautigan short story. In Watermelon Sugar. I don't know if you know it.
This is in New York. Why not in Kansas City?
Well, you have to go where the venue is.
Yeah.
But this is a collaboration with the New York-based musician and choreographer named Stephen Recker.
I know musicians here.
Well, hey, come on and be a part of it.
No, you know, that's the terrific thing about, you know, the arts community is that collaboration. Mm-hmm. And whether it's in a different city or a different state altogether, I mean, yeah. there's people always willing to work with you to bring together something, you know, that's wonderful and fascinating and delightful to the community.
Yeah, especially in Kansas City. I mean, yeah, that sort of yeah. willingness to contribute yeah. time and labor and energy to projects has been so inspiring. And
it's yeah, I mean, yeah. It's good to have this sort of close-knit city. It's like a small town.
Yeah.
I mean, really, in the creative community, everyone sort of knows everyone else. So you really have to be nice to everybody.
Well, it's nice, you know? Too, because you end up kind of learning all sorts of skills or working in ways that you didn't think you would. Like my two interns last year who are just so wonderful, Derek Dobbins and Wendy Vong, I just have to say their names because they're so fantastic, ended up helping, you know, light and run sound for a performance we did, and they probably have had no theatrical background and learned it all in 2 days. But I think that's the kind of surprises and openness that the arts here in Kansas City really allows for.
So. Yeah, I mean, I just started board hopping tonight, so I think I'm doing okay.
Great.
No,
yeah.
But I mean, you really just sort of, you just throw yourselves in.
Yeah.
It's like, let's put on a show, and then you call who you know, and,
yeah.
and you know, how you can make that happen. And
oh, my gosh, the generosity.
Hey, Judy, let's put on a show.
Yeah, let's do it. But the generosity is amazing. I mean, even for this last exhibition, yeah. I mean, I borrowed, you know, equipment from the art space, from Mid-America uh-huh. Arts Alliance. I mean, uh-huh. people have just been yeah. so friendly yeah. and generous
then,
with me. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and then there's people, you know, like Heidi Van that has Fish Tank, you know, the performance space there in the Crossroads. She's always willing to sort of give you, you know, anything, advice, assistance, or, you know. And that's really good about this community,
yeah.
you know.
And one of our guests next week is someone who's...
who would that be?
People together in the art community. Nicole Emanuel, who's the executive director of Inner
great.
Urban Art House.
Yeah, yeah.
And she'll be on with us next week.
Yeah, the work that they're doing and everybody's doing down at Inner Urban Art House is really incredible. So, yeah, looking forward to that interview.
And Danny, why don't you give us you have a website. Outside of the Charlotte Street website.
Yeah, it's dandannydaniel.com. So it's
that's a tough one.
Yeah, so dandannydaniel.com is sort of the warehouse site for previous curatorial projects, my writing, other, you know, endeavors I've been a part of. So
you're a writer and you are performance art and...
Yeah, well, the performance stuff is new. I'm kind of operating yeah. as a sort yeah. of experimental dramaturg yeah. for that. But yeah, but yeah I taught here for UMKC and KCAI. And then my background, honestly, has been kind of a hybrid of working in the arts and working for a social justice organization.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
I have a activist background as well.
And what about the research?
Research has been a big part of it. I often get essay commissions mm-hmm. or sort of will be commissioned to do research for curators or other arts organizers. Yeah, so that's been sort of, you know, all of us that are doing independent artwork in the world kind of end up having 5 or 6 trades simultaneously.
Yes.
So, yeah. Part of a survivalist.
I don't even want to tell you
how
what I've done in my,
yeah.
my lifetime to support myself with art.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just really want to quickly just let our listeners know a bit about the upcoming calendar for the arts and literary and all that, and then we'll close up. Tomorrow, November 13th in downtown Kansas City is the Downtown Kansas City Street Art Closing Reception and Artist Talk. That's from 5 p.m. to 7 at 1000 Walnut, Suite 200. So it's the 2014 Downtown Street Art Creative Placemaking Pilot Project. That's closing tomorrow. On Friday, the Jones Gallery will be open at 6 p.m. for their second Friday at 1717 Walnut Street. Also, the second Friday is the Art Hub let's see, Art Hop, Vibe Tribe, at 5504 Troost, here in Kansas City. That's an art and hip-hop showcase. And, Michelle, something's happening over at the Writer's Place, yeah?
Yes, on Friday, November 14th, it will be the November Riverfront Reading, which begins at 8 p.m. at the Writer's Place, 3607 Pennsylvania. And the featured readers this month are writers Joe Benevento and Eve Ott. And you can find more information at writersplace.org.
Now, have you ever, as a kid growing up, the both of you, have you been big fans of certain particular books? Did you grow up with some books that, oh, man, I got it. Yeah, that really stuck in my mind.
I was a Sherlock Holmes addict, for one. And then as I got a little older in high school, Trinity by Leon Uris, and then I ended up reading all of his books.
Yeah, I the first thing that popped into my mind is I was such a Joan Didion diehard high school. Yeah, and still to this day. And, you know, it's for me, I kind of learned how to write by reading Joan Didion. And I was so, just... I follow her career just obsessively.
Yeah. What is it, Magical Thinking?
Yeah, Magical Thinking.
Well, I ask you that because it's not the really the answer that I was looking for.
But you should have prompted us better, Maria.
I just wanted to let you all know that on Monday, a very exciting creator and author is coming to town. Chris Van Allsburg, he's the creator of Jumanji and Polar Express, and a couple of my favorites, The Stranger and The Mysteries of Harris Burdick. He's going to be appearing at The Reading Reptile Monday, November 17th at 6 p.m. I would definitely check out their website because I believe you have to have a ticket, which they're not charging for the event, but I think it's just sort of a matter of headcount. So for more information, go to Reading Reptile. Listen, next week we did mention that Nicole Emanuel will be with us. She's the founder of the Interurban Art House, which is a nonprofit that develops affordable space for art studios, has events in an exhibition space, and that's at 8001 Conzer Street in Overland Park, Kansas. So she'll be with us, and I think a few other people will be joining us.
Yes, photographer Sharon Rodriguez. She and I have an exhibit. We're the featured artists.
Look at you.
Right now, called The Beauty of the Everyday. We both do photographs and put words with them, and then we will have music by Amado Espinosa. Or Amado Espinosa will be with us, and he and Karen Linsander will be performing at our third Friday event, November 21st.
Great. So, Michelle, we want to give a thanks to our wonderful guests this evening.
Yes, Deborah Schaus, Ron Zoglin, Cynthia Schroer, and Danny Orendorf.
Yay, Danny.
Well, thank you for having me.
I do want to remind our listeners to stay tuned for American Roots next, followed by Chamber Music at 9:30, then From Arc to Microchip at 11:30. And you know what? I just sort of took off our Art Speak Radio music, but that's okay because I have something else going on for you. Honey, I'm heading home. Thank you for listening to Art Speak Radio.